You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras National League Central. It is Matt Wehmeyer alongside Jeff Nelson as today we'll break down all five teams in the NL Central as we talk to all five beat reporters from the division as we get their take on the overall attitude and vibe in spring training and also address the major individual storylines for each team as they get prepared for the 2015 season. And we are joined on the phone right now by Jennifer Langosch, MLB.com Cardinals reporter. Jennifer, thanks for joining us. And just to start things off, talk about the overall attitude and the vibe of the St. Louis team heading into the 2015 season.
Yeah, I mean, I think right now everybody's just really anticipating the game's getting going. Obviously, players have been down here for some time, most having gotten down here pretty early. Thus far in camp, health has been pretty good. I know, obviously, the big story has been Adam Wainwright and his health. Seeing him get off the mound today, I think, certainly gave the Cardinals a little bit of confidence in his ability to get back, hopefully, by opening day, in their eyes. So, health has been good. There's a little bit of competition here in camp, which the Cardinals always like to incorporate, but certainly the expectations are high coming into this year. I mean, this is a team that's become a perennial postseason favorite, and I don't think that that's going to change at all this year.
Well, Jennifer, you look at this team, and on paper, probably the favorite again in the National League, probably to go to the World Series, but definitely to win that Central Division. You just mentioned Adam Wainwright. How concerned are the Cardinals with that abdominal strain? And also Michael Wacha, where do they see him going into the 2015 season?
Yeah, with regards to Wainwright, I mean, not overly concerned. I mean, really, he's at a point right now where he can continue his throwing program. I mean, the good news in all of this is that the abdominal strain does not affect his arm. It has nothing to do with his ability to throw. He actually threw just over 40 pitches off the bullpen mound today and is able to do that without any discomfort. Really, where he's limited at this moment is just in the running and the agility and the mobility drills. He's not getting out there and doing pitcher's fielding practice with the rest of the group. So that's kind of his status right now, but we're probably only about 2 to 3 weeks from seeing him on the mound in a Grapefruit League game. So, you know, whether he's ready on opening day is still a little bit of a question mark, but certainly if he's not ready April 5th, I would think we're going to see him on the mound at some time in that opening week. You know, you asked about Michael Wacha. Right now, all signs are really good with where he is. I mean, he came back late last year when the shoulder got healthy. There were no setbacks this winter. He stopped having to have kind of the every two-week MRIs to check on that shoulder. So really now, you know, the Cardinals just need to see if this is a guy who can get through a full season healthy at this level for the first time in his career. And the hope is that by changing up maybe some of his in-between starts routine, some of the workouts that he does, that he's built a little bit of that shoulder strength up to prevent that issue from cropping up again.
Jennifer, remaining with the rotation, do you sense more of a comfort level with John Lackey after being picked up midseason last year by the team now that he can get completely settled into facing NL hitters for 2015?
Yeah, I think so. It's funny, you know, he was joking here that he's never been in a National League camp and had to take so much pitchers hitting and bunting practice here in spring training, but you know, it's also interesting. You look at this Cardinals rotation, and he's kind of the least talked about guy at the moment. Everybody's curious about Wainwright's health. Wacha, is he coming back? Carlos Martinez, what can he do? Lance Lynn just signing an extension. And Lackey's just kind of here going about his business. But a guy who's very much established himself and who is a big piece of this Cardinals rotation. So, yeah, I mean, especially as you have some other question marks in this rotation, having a workhorse like John Lackey around, certainly a huge benefit for this Cardinals club.
Jennifer, you just mentioned Carlos Martinez. My opinion, maybe one of the biggest question marks of where he fits in. Do you put him in a bullpen? Do you start him? Where the Cardinals see him in 2015?
You know, they'd really like to give him an opportunity to start. I mean, this is a kid that they've long had their eye on as a starting pitcher. I mean, obviously we've seen him the last 2 years get most of his work out of the bullpen, but one of the reasons the Cardinals were comfortable in trading away Shelby Miller was because they had Carlos Martinez, and they thought this would be his time to shine. It's also why the Cardinals didn't go as aggressively after some of those big starters in the free agent market. I mean, they didn't want to block this opportunity. So, you know, Carlos is actually going to get the first start here in Grapefruit League play, which I think is interesting. They want to get him on the mound to see him as much as possible this spring. And he's going to be given every opportunity to win that job. I think there's two keys for him. One is efficiency. In the few spot starts that we've seen from him, his issues have usually just been efficiency issues that haven't allowed him to get past the fourth and fifth. He needs to get there. And then just controlling his emotions. And he's a kid who can really use those emotions to his benefit a lot of the time, but just picking and choosing his spot. So, you know, I think if he can show those two things in spring, I would expect to see him in that opening day rotation because the Cardinals do. They really want to give this kid a chance.
And Jennifer, assuming that Carlos Martinez does become a part of that rotation, combined with the departures of Pat Neshek and Jason Mott, is there at least a little concern that the bullpen might be a little thin?
You know, I think the Cardinals believe they have enough options now, knowing who's going to fill what role. I think that is a little bit unknown at this moment. I mean, for all the talk that there was about Jason Hayward coming here, Jordan Walden coming over in that trade was a big piece of the deal in the Cardinals' eyes, and they believe that he can be the eighth inning guy, kind of where Pat Neshek was last year, setting up for Trevor Rosenthal. So he fits there. They have Seth Maness returning and Matt Belisle coming in under a one-year deal. I think those are two guys that the Cardinals see as potentially being able to fill that seventh inning void. And then you have a slew of lefties here. I think one of the most intriguing players in camp right now is Kevin Segrist. I mean, we all remember what he did coming up in 2013, nearly unhittable, over just over 40 appearances. And then last year had a real terrible year where he dealt with a number of different injuries. So if the Cardinals can get a healthy Kevin Segrist back, which he has been so far, and he's looked really good in camp, potentially you find your lefty setup guy in him. And then you have some other options with Randy Choate, Sam Freeman, Marco Gonzalez. If he's not in the rotation, perhaps he fits in the bullpen. So there are a lot of names, a lot of options. How exactly they're going to piece them together, I think, still remains to be determined.
Jennifer, you mentioned Jason Hayward. The Braves didn't lock him up like they did with Freeman. They traded him away. What, probably one of the best defensive right fielders in the game. Offensively, they're still probably waiting for him to come around and hit that potential. You know, still that threat and could be a threat and probably will be a threat with the Cardinals. Where do you see him fitting in that lineup? You know, the Braves had him at the top, probably not real comfortable there, but he doesn't have to do that with the Cardinals.
No, and he's definitely not going to be hitting up at the top. Actually, the Cardinals have basically already told him that much. You know, he could really fit here anywhere from 2 through 6. I think the Cardinals, you know, indications that I've gotten are they're leaning toward maybe putting him in that number 2 hole to start with, so behind Matt Carpenter, right ahead of Matt Holliday. But the hope is that by getting Jason out of that leadoff spot, that it frees him up to kind of be the middle of the order hitter that he grew up being. You know, in talking to Jason, you know, the Braves needed him to be a leadoff hitter kind of out of desperation, and so he filled the role and did fairly well in it. He was never comfortable in it, and he never felt it really maximized what he could do. I think the Cardinals are hopeful by moving him out of that. Maybe they see a little bit more power. I mean, this is a guy not but a couple of years removed from hitting 27 homers in a season. Can they get that kind of production from him? Obviously, you have the stolen base elements. If you keep him near the top, you have some speed up at the top of that lineup. But he will be in a run-producing spot for this lineup. It's been interesting to watch him here in camp. He's very comfortable, very loose. You know, I didn't see him over his years in Atlanta's camp. But I think he's come here and realized he doesn't have to be the savior of the offense, that he has, you know, a group around him that can really complement him. And I think he's looking forward to being a part of a pretty big offense here in St. Louis.
Jennifer, a tough topic to bring up, obviously, but the tragic death of Oscar Tavares last October, how has that been addressed by the players and the coaches so far in spring training?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been addressed in several ways here. You know, this is the first time that this group has been together since that tragedy just after the postseason. And one of the things that the Cardinals are very intentional about doing is having various seminars and various speakers here at camp to talk about the issues of drinking and driving and decision-making and that element of it. So they've already had a guest speaker come in over the weekend. They intend to have a couple more. There's some different programs the Cardinals are going to implement, again, to encourage their players to make good decisions off the field and then also to warn them of the potential consequences with poor decision-making. So I think that's something we're going to continue to see throughout spring, throughout the season. And there has been also a healing aspect of it. I mean, each of these players and staff members kind of dealt with the grief individually over the offseason, but I think there was something to be said about coming together again, talking about it as a group, which they did right before their first full squad workout, and kind of dealing and getting ready to move on.
Jennifer Langosch, thanks for joining us, MLB.com Cardinals reporter. We are joined on the phone by MLB.com Pirates reporter Tom Singer, who comes to us from Pirates spring training. Tom, thanks for joining us. And just to start things off, talk about kind of the attitude and the expectations of this Pirates team coming off back-to-back playoff appearances.
Well, it's true to the roof, or at least it would be if they had a roof over their head, sure, which they don't. Everybody's really optimistic. They definitely sense that they're ready to build up the success of the last two seasons. The core of the team is pretty much set, which is certainly something unique for this team in recent years. And they're really focused on kind of tricking out some of the margins, you know, working in the banks, a fifth starter, the last arm in a bullpen. But they're pretty much established, you know, stable, and they'll have a tough time waiting through 32 exhibition games to get it going, put it that way.
Tom, you look at this division, could be one of the strongest in baseball. What do the Pirates have to do? What part of that team has to excel for them to get back to the playoffs for a third year in a row?
Well, I would imagine, getting a little bit more production out of the offense, which was kind of creative last season, but overall, was in the middle of the pack as far as scoring runs. They're not going to have a world-class pitching staff, certainly competitive, don't get me wrong, but it's not the kind of staff that can carry a team. So they'll have to get contributions from the offense. But, besides the guys who definitely put themselves on the map for last season, obviously somebody like McCutchen's been there the whole time. Neil Walker had a career year. You've got at least three guys that can definitely make that big offensive difference. Gregory Polanco, number one. There's no doubt that he'll verify his high potential. He kind of wore down the last couple months last season. Pedro Alvarez, I think he's number two. He's been such a mystery all offseason, a huge X factor, but he just looks very tremendous. Physical shape seems to have made the mental adjustments to playing first base. And the third guy is Jung-ho Kang. I mean, this guy is a real mystery, but I think he could be a real big producer in the infield.
And, Tom, I want to elaborate on Kang just a little bit. How has he looked in camp? How is he fitting in with his new teammates? And if you had to guess, what kind of numbers do you think he's going to put up after putting up staggering numbers in Korea last season?
He's fitting extremely well. He made a point of coming here to camp a couple of weeks before he had to come just to get acclimated, get to know the guys. The camaraderie, other than the obvious language barrier, is pretty obvious. He's a very confident young man, and in practice, he's looked tremendous. You know, you have to keep in mind he's hitting off coaches for the most part, but the power definitely has come true. Way too early to project what his 41 home runs in Korea might translate to here, but we haven't seen anything that would suggest that what the Pirates thought they were getting is a mirage. I mean, he could be the real deal.
Tom, the biggest loss from last year, Russell Martin no longer with the Pirates up there in Toronto. In the catching situation, you have Cervelli and Stewart, something the Yankees have seen a couple years ago. Now they move over to the Pirates. Cervelli's never been an everyday starter. Does he get that nod to be, to have the chance to catch every day? And how's that situation going to map out?
Well, he's definitely number one. I don't know about every day. If they get 100, 110 games out of him, they'll be overjoyed because, as you mentioned, he's never played a lot, mostly due to injuries that he hasn't been able to avoid. Russell Martin was very critical to this team, no question about it. But my early impression is that Cervelli, once again, if he stays healthy, he brings a pretty identical skill set that Martin was renowned for. Pitch training, pitch blocking, working with the staff, his main priority, not what he does at bat. High energy guy. Martin was a go-to guy on this team in a lot of different ways. And Cervelli comes off to me as almost a clone of him. Now, we'll have to see how it pans out. But, fans have to remember that although Martin was a tremendous influence, had a tremendous productive year last season, when he came over from the Yankees, he came over as a 2-10 hitter. Now, all the credit to him for remaking himself with the Pirates. But as far as the reputation you bring to the Pirates, I don't know if Cervelli's that far behind Martin.
Tom, is there a sense that the Pirates finally have some stability at the corner infield spots with Josh Harrison presumably taking over at third and Pedro Alvarez moving from third to first base?
Well, ideally, they do. But, I mean, both guys have some baggage. Harrison is a former utility man who found a home at third base. But he did not get to that position on a permanent basis until August. So although I don't think there's much doubt that he can carry it over to a full season just because of the way he approaches the game, he's very confident himself. And, of course, on the other side of the corner, you've got Alvarez, who is an unknown at first base. He started to play there a little bit last season, right before a leg injury knocked him out the last month and a half. So even though he looks very comfortable and in good shape physically and mentally, right now it's still just a projection. We haven't seen him play there. We'll have to see how that pans out. But, if you know, he could be the real difference maker. This club hasn't had a first baseman play more than 110 games at that position since 2008, Adam LaRoche. So that's been a real black hole. And if somebody like Alvarez can fill it and also provide the power that they come to expect from him, that could be a huge difference maker.
Tom, you go into that rotation and you bring two guys back in Liriano and A.J. Burnett. I thought was a great mentor. And once you got him out of New York, did an outstanding job a couple years ago. But I want to talk about Gerrit Cole. You know, last year, 22 starts, 138 innings. How long do the Pirates, you know, let him go? Do you see him going above 200 innings? Does he become that number one guy for the Pirates?
Well, absolutely. He's got the potential to do that. There's no concern at all about his putting any kind of innings limit on him. The reason he only had that 128 last season, he spent two long stretches on the DL. We've had this discussion many times with the management. They think he's a strong, obviously young guy. He's a very good mechanic, so there's no mechanical issues that could lead to any kind of injury if he has, you know, 200-plus innings. So that's definitely what they expect out of him. And, you know, they're not anointing him as the ace yet, because you do have those two veterans. But I think, you know, in the wake of Liriano and Burnett, he could definitely emerge as the ace at some point this season, where he's regarded as the number one, which is, you know, that's his destiny.
Tom, we've somehow gone this long without mentioning the name Andrew McCutchen. He is the undisputed face of the franchise, a clubhouse leader. Do you get the sense that he is really settling in more and more to becoming that presence for this team moving forward?
Well, I mean, he obviously already is. And, you know, conjecture has already begun. He's got four more years in his contract. But, you know, there's already a lot of conjecture whether the Pirates can keep him beyond that, which is looking way into the future. There's no question that, you know, he's the face of the franchise. He's one of the faces of the National League. And he's, I think he's getting more and more productive. It's interesting that, you know, MVP 2013, last season had a very comparable season, but I really think that he hasn't even scratched his surface as far as his overall production. You know, we're talking a potential 30-30 guy, the 300 average, 400 on base, 500 plus slugging, and always getting more confident defensively. He had some, you know, early defensive issues as far as taking the right angles on balls and throwing with accuracy. I mean, in all facets, you know, your classic five-tool player, and he's sharpening all five of his tools.
Tom, you got a couple guys that they got in the offseason that could be key in the bench. Sean Rodriguez, who could play any position from Tampa Bay. Also, Corey Hart. How's Corey Hart looked? And, you know, I'm sure everybody would like to see him get back to his Brewer days.
He's looked good in the practice. You know, it's kind of a bad irony because obviously he's had leg injuries the last couple seasons. And sure enough, he was scratched from a squad game because he suffered a cut on one of his legs getting out of a whirlpool. Obviously, it's a very minor thing, but, you know, that injury bugaboo is still, you know, haunting him. But no, but otherwise, you know, that's a very minor thing. He looks great, cranking the ball with a lot of power, is in good shape. And he can, you know, if his legs stay healthy, I don't know how much playing time he would get because, you know, ideally he would platoon with Alvarez. You know, Alvarez never really platooned too much at third base. He got his sacks against left-handers, did not handle them well. I don't think there's a hope that Alvarez could ever become totally productive against the southpaws. That's why they got Corey Hart, who essentially is penciled in to start against, you know, left-handers. I don't know how much playing time he'll get in the outfield. You know, Polanco gained about 15 pounds. He's a lot longer than he was last season, and he looks like, you know, 150-game guy. So, you know what, Corey Hart, I checked this out. He's been pretty productive as a pincher throughout his career. So he may be one of those guys that when he's not in the lineup against lefties, you know, he's your big home run threat coming off the bench.
And, Tom, in addition to Gregory Polanco, another young guy that had some ups and downs in 2014, Starling Marte. Talk about expectations for him heading into 2015.
Very high. He did have, his last couple of months were very solid. Once he overcame a concussion, there were some issues in his family. His mother-in-law passed away, and you could tell that that really affected him deeply. But once he got past those couple of hurdles, you know, one emotional, one physical, the last couple months of the season, he gave him everything they could probably expect. It's kind of interesting when McCutcheon went on the DL for a couple of weeks. Marte got to play center, which is his original position, and that really kind of lit a fire under him. He enjoyed being back in the middle of things, and his bat really picked up. And then when he moved back to left field, when McCutcheon came back, you know, he kept that. Marte kept that thing going. Once he got. He got ignited. He kept the flame going, throughout September.
Our thanks to Tom Singer, MLB.com Pirates reporter. We are joined on the phone by MLB.com Brewers reporter Adam McKelvey, who comes to us from Brewers Spring Training. Adam, thanks for joining us. And let's just start off by having you discuss the general vibe and the attitude and the feeling around Brewers camp right now.
Well, they see themselves as a contender, and I don't know that that's a widely held view nationally, but inside the clubhouse, they think of themselves as a team that spent 150 days in first place last year and returned largely intact, and they think that they should be that type of club again this year. And that was a topic in their first full squad meeting. The owner, Mark Attanasio, didn't shy away from the collapse late last season. I think to the contrary, they talked about that, but more framing it in the sense of the collapse hurt so bad because of how good the team was for 5 months. So high hopes, and I think they view themselves as a sleeper team.
Adam, you've been around this team quite a bit. What do you see that needs to change, that needs to go right for them to contend in the Central Division?
Well, I keep saying that they need to get their five starting pitchers wrapped up in bubble wrap right now and get them to opening day somehow, because they've got five talented pitchers, including Kyle Loesch and Matt Garza and Willie Peralta, who won 18 games last year, at the top. And I think that top three is pretty solid. If there's not a Clayton Kershaw in that group, it's at least very good. But very little depth once you go from the number six starter and beyond. And that's going to be, I think, a big issue. And, for example, their fifth guy is now Jimmy Nelson, in the wake of the Yovani Gallardo trade, a young pitcher who – the Brewers really like a big bulldog. They believe he's a big league pitcher and going to be a good big league pitcher. But he's got a little hamstring issue that set him back a little bit. And normally it's the kind of thing that it would barely catch the radar. We're so early in spring training, definitely no cause for concern. But I think when you look at it in the fact that if he has some kind of a setback, who do they go to? And it's very difficult in this camp, even when you look down the line at non-roster guys, to find anybody with any level of experience that could step in and fill that role. So getting the starting rotation to the season intact, in good health, is, I think, going to be a big story in this camp.
Adam, of course, Ryan Braun, the centerpiece of this Milwaukee offense. He had a down 2014, of course, mostly due to a thumb injury. He had a rather interesting procedure on that thumb in the offseason. If you could discuss that and discuss if he is fully healthy going into 2015.
Well, the answer to the last part is yes. He came to camp in great health, feeling extremely optimistic about his chances to, as he put it, return to being one of the best players in baseball. Ryan Braun and the Brewers think they addressed the issue with his thumb. He had an inflamed nerve there at the base of his thumb in his hand, and he had a procedure after the season to essentially freeze that thing. And since then, he's taken batting practice, he's done lots of swings, and all the reports have been positive so far. But Ryan Braun himself has said that the big test is going to be in spring training, because that's when you're hitting every day, you're seeing live pitching again, you're getting jammed inside at 95, falling balls off the end of the bat, all of the little things that can cause problems for a hitter's hand. And I talked to him just this week about it again, now that we're a few days into spring training. He says it's all good so far. And guys, he's really excited to not have to discuss the health of his hand every day. And it's a big deal for the team if he could get to that point again, because the last 2 years he has been totally compromised in terms of being that, you know, MVP caliber type player. And for an offense to go, I'm pretty sure that your best hitter needs to be your best hitter, and that's what the Brewers are looking for.
Well, Adam, you look at that offense in general. You have Gomez in center and Davis in left. Power-wise, could you see these guys, all three of them with Braun, hit about 100 home runs combined?
Well, that's the idea. I mean, Chris Davis is a player. The K-H-R-I-S Davis is a player nationally. I don't think his name is out there. But you look at his slugging numbers early in his career, and it's pretty impressive. And he plays at a ballpark that's conducive to home runs. He plays for general manager Doug Melvin, who believes in building your team to play to your ballpark, and that means slugging. So he's in a position to succeed with this club. I think it's critical that the Brewers last year traded for Gerardo Parra, who somehow, playing for two teams last year, not being an everyday player for either of them, was a finalist for the Gold Glove Award. That's how good he is defensively. He's a left-handed hitter, and yet the Brewers made clear at the time of the trade and now that Chris Davis is the left fielder. They are not going to platoon at that position, even though in Gerardo Parra they have, who, you know, I think you can make an argument, one of the best fourth outfielders in this game. So they are totally committed to Chris Davis. If Ryan Braun is healthy, he's going to hit his homers. And then Carlos Gomez is, you know, is a fascinating guy in that once the Brewers took the reins off and just let him be himself, and that means every now and then swinging so hard he falls down on his backside, he's turned into a top 20 MVP player the last couple of years and a top 10 MVP player one of those seasons. And I think Ron Reneke is thinking strongly about hitting him leadoff because they love the idea of what Carlos Gomez does to that first at bat of the game. You cannot lay in a fastball to start off a game if you're an opposing pitcher because he's going to hit it out. And I think he's going to get some opportunities to continue to just swing hard, and that means he's going to hit for some power.
Adam, last season, Jonathan Lucroy had perhaps the best offensive season of any catcher in Major League Baseball. He's got some hamstring issues, though, right now, though. What is his status?
They continue to really downplay the impact of this, and he's not going to play in games, in spring training games, because they don't want him running full bore just yet. But he's catching bullpens, so he's getting to know the pitchers, including the new pitchers on the staff. He is participating in defensive drills. He will participate in defensive drills at first base because he remains an option with Adam Lind to share time there. He's doing everything that he needs to do or that he would normally do in spring training except sprint. So he's making the case that he'll actually get more at-bats this spring because he'll go over to minor league camp, hit second every inning, which is the position he'll probably bat for this team. And, you know, he could end up with more ABs not playing in the Cactus League and get to opening day in pretty good shape. That's theoretically the idea. They'd love him to get healthy. Obviously, he is sort of surpassing Ryan Braun as the face of this team and an important player. And I think you're right that he's become one of the best offensive catchers in this game. He's in the conversation, at least, with, you know, Buster Posey, Yadier Molina, Salvador Perez, those types of really great players in this game. So far, so good with him. Again, we're early in camp. And there are lots of tests yet to for Jonathan Lucroy yet to undergo.
Well, Adam, let's talk about the pitching staff a little bit. Another signing here in the last week. K-Rod comes back. He comes back on a two-year deal. Was that always there for him to come back, or were they not really ready for Jonathan Broxton to take over that closer role, and they much rather have him as a setup guy?
Well, I think it was clear when we all came down to spring training and asked who the closer is, and they've got Jonathan Broxton, who's saved a bunch of games. I believe he's top 20 in career saves among active players, and they're not ready to name him as the closer. You knew they were working on something. And concurrently, and my understanding is that this wasn't an either-or with Jonathan Papelbon, a trade with the Phillies, or sign K-Rod. I think there was a lot of back and forth about what's the best way to go with this. With Papelbon, you probably get a pitcher more in his prime coming off a really solid season, but there's costs in terms of the dollars that he's due this season and then an option for next season. And you'd have to give up players to get him, obviously, in a trade. With Rodriguez, you get him for 2 years for the same salary you'd pay one for Papelbon. You don't have to give up a player. And, you know, look, guys, it just makes sense. Rodriguez has been very good for this Brewers team over the last couple of years. He succeeded when given a chance to close games last season. He has a manager in Ron Reneke who goes back all the way to his early days with the Angels. There's a lot of trust between these two sides. And I know there's questions about K-Rod. He's spent a lot of bullets in his career. He has given up home runs at a greater rate as time has gone on. But you can't really argue with some of the numbers and the production he's given. And I think the risk was low enough relative to what other relief pitchers were costing that the Brewers felt comfortable giving this another shot. So you look at it now, they've got four legitimate closer types potentially in their bullpen. K-Rod is in for sure. Broxton is in for sure. Jim Henderson was supposed to be the closer last year, coming back from shoulder surgery. The signs are pretty good for him right now, so he's a kind of a fingers-crossed type of guy. They also have Chris Perez in camp, who hasn't been the elite closer for a couple of years, but the velocity was there last season with the Dodgers. That never wavered, and he's in camp getting a really good long look from this Brewers team, and they love the idea of having multiple closers, and you know, there's the potential that all four of those guys, depending on what happens with some other pieces here in spring training, could end up making this club.
Adam, in the Yovani Gallardo trade, the Brewers got back a pretty intriguing youngster in shortstop Luis Sardinas. Could he possibly challenge Gene Segura for the starting gig at shortstop?
I don't think so. I think they're committed yet to Segura, who's a young enough player that they don't want to give up on him too early. He's made some tweaks to his batting stance, and they believe that he's going to roll over a little bit less, get back to driving the ball a little bit more. He's also a fantastic defensive player, which the reports when they made that Zach Greinke trade and got Gene Segura from the Angels were that he might be a second baseman. And as far as I can tell, the only reason people would say that is his body. He looks like a second baseman. He plays like a shortstop, and I think that is going to help him get as long a leash as possible to get back to being an offensive player that he was during the first half of his first season with the Brewers. Sardinas will have to make this club on paper, it looks like, as a utility guy. They're going to look at him at second base and third base. They think there's some potential there with the bat, more of a line drive hitter, probably less pop than Segura has the potential for. But a younger guy is going to grow into his power a little bit, they believe. And you look at the Brewers, they're thin in many areas. We talked starting pitching. They're very thin at third base in the organization. They've had a terrible time replacing Prince Fielder at first base. But one area where they have a ton of players right now is shortstop. And their top prospect, Arcia, is a shortstop. They have a couple of other guys in camp, including one Hector Gomez, a big, tall shortstop who they like and is also going to vie for a utility role. It's a position where they're very deep. So whether one of those guys can move around to one of those positions of need, whether they have those guys available in a trade, I think there's a lot of options, and Sardinas is one of them, a lot of different paths that his career could take in the next couple of seasons.
That's Adam McKelvey, MLB.com Brewers reporter. We are joined on the phone right now by MLB.com Reds reporter Mark Sheldon, who joins us from Red Spring Training, Mark's 10th year covering the Reds in spring training. Mark, thanks for joining us. Just give us kind of the vibe and the general sense around camp right now as the Reds get ready for the 2015 season.
Well, it's a year where they have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. They feel a little bit underappreciated because of the fact that they know after last year having a 76-win season and a fourth-place finish where they didn't look very good, that they have to earn the respect back from the league. They know they won't be given to them. They know the division's really tough. They have all the rivals have improved, and they have to go out and do it. And there's just a lot of talk of just putting themselves back on the map and showing that they're a better team than they were last year.
Mark, you just mentioned 76 wins. Brian Price, I played with him in the minor leagues again and had him as a pitching coach. What do you see different this spring training from last after his first year being a manager?
I don't see too much different yet. It's a little early, but I do see the idea that he's learned a lot from last year. I think one of the things that really kind of bugged him was the one-run losses. They led the majors last year and 38 of them. And I think that irked him because a lot of that sometimes goes back to managerial decisions and things that maybe didn't go the right way that he wanted to. And I think he's also kind of talked a little bit about not being afraid to put guys in positions they may not be happy about and not being afraid to be the bad guy, so to speak. When he wants something from a guy, he's not going to be afraid to hurt some feelings. And I think those things might help him going forward in year two.
Mark, in 2013, Joey Votto played all 162 games. Last season, just 62. Is he fully healthy heading into 2015?
He appears to be. I haven't seen anything where he's been limited. He came in on the first day and was ready to go. He participated in all the activities and all the drills. He's been hitting in live BP, taking batting practice, and heading into the Cactus League opener. He seems to be all the way back. He haven't heard any complaints about his quad yet.
Mark, you mentioned a chip on his shoulder. You know, you look at this team offensively, a lot of down years. You just, mentioned Votto, also Jay Bruce, Phillips. You know, home run-wise, the power-wise was not there. You add Marlon Byrd. What can you expect from this offense going forward this year?
Well, they really are putting all their eggs in the baskets of the guys that are returning. They didn't go out and make a lot of dynamic offseason maneuvers outside of Marlon Byrd. They really are counting on Jay Bruce going back to his track record where he hit about 30 homers and 100 RBIs. They're counting on Brandon Phillips after two kind of injury-filled years of being closer to where he's been in the past offensively. And, of course, there's Votto, who really it does hinge a lot on, who is able to get on base, but they haven't had the power, the slugging that they've seen from him in the last couple of years as he's battled some injuries. But and, of course, Byrd, they're looking to get production. He had 25 homers last year, career high. They only got 19 homers from the variety of left fielders they had last year. So I think if he can supply some of the offense that was missing last year, they should have a better offensive team that would allow them to contend in the division.
Mark, when you look at the starting rotation, both Matt Latos and Alfredo Simon gone from the 2014 team. Is it going to be up to guys like Tony Cingrani and the newcomer Anthony DeSclafani to kind of fill those holes in the rotation?
Yes, they're considered the leading candidates right now without a game being played. But there's also guys that are like Jason Marquis who are familiar names, or Paul Mahalan. And then, of course, there's an X factor like Raisel Iglesias, who could be, if he has a really good camp, a contender for a spot too. And there also is a slight possibility of a third spot being open if Homer Bailey is not ready. That's not looking good right now that he'd be ready for the first two or three starts of the season, but so they might need another guy to come up and take those spots and do well. So it's open competition, and they have about six guys that are battling for it.
Mark, the bullpen, you have Chapman, obviously one of the best closers in the game with that over 100-mile-an-hour fastball. Who sets him up? Where does Marshall stand as far as getting ready for opening day?
I don't think he'll be ready. He's not throwing off a mound yet. He's still throwing on flat ground. He still has a little bit of achiness. He had a setback when camp started, and the setup roles are kind of up for grabs right now. There's some guys here with different abilities to do different things. You have Burke Badenhoff, who can get ground balls. You have Sam LaCure, who can pitch in any situation, even though he's coming off a down year. You have Jumbo Diaz, who was a nice surprise last year when he got called up. J.J. Hoover, coming up a really bad year, but he looked good in camp, and they're hoping that he can kind of put 2014 behind him and go back to what he did in 2013. And there's Manny Parra. They acquired as a minor league signing Jose Mijares. There's a few guys that are here that are vying for spots that are seeing what they can do. And I also forgot about Kevin Gregg, who saved 33 games in 2013 and had an injury-filled year and kind of had a trouble finding a job last year, and he's in camp trying to prove himself.
And, Mark, as far-fetched as this may sound, would the Reds at all entertain the notion of perhaps trading Johnny Cueto or Aroldis Chapman while they both have peak value right now?
Well, they haven't yet, and then I think they could have done it last summer at the trade deadline, and Bob Castellini, the ownership, was opposed to that. They didn't want to make that kind of move. They really do feel like they can contend, and they can't contend without those two guys. Now, if things kind of go south and don't work out, I would definitely expect those guys to be moved before the deadline, but I don't think you're going to see anything happen before the regular season opens. Cueto has a deadline of opening day to get a long-term deal done, and there hasn't been a whole lot of movement yet. I'm not optimistic they'll get a signing done, but you never know. But if they're going out and they contend and they expect to contend, they need Cueto.
Mark, with 76 wins going into spring training, there's always changes. There's always position battles. Any interesting battles that could develop during this year's spring training?
Well, the biggest one's the rotation and the bullpen, and then the bench spots, really. There's a lot of guys vying for spots. They don't have a lot of power guys, but they have Brennan Bosch in camp, and he's he had some nice numbers in AAA, but not so nice numbers in the majors. You have Christopher Negron, who was a nice surprise last year, and he can play all different spots around the field. It's really the everyday eight, so to speak, is really settled. There's nothing up for grabs. Zach Cozart, the manager, Brian Price, said that he's entrenched at shortstop, that he doesn't have to look over his shoulder when they acquired Eugenio Suarez. They don't really think that's going to be a competition spot, so he's set at shortstop. So really it's the bullpen, the rotation, and the bench where it's wide open.
That's MLB.com Reds reporter Mark Sheldon. Joining us on the phone right now is Kerry Muscat, MLB.com Cubs reporter. Kerry, thanks for joining us. And just to start off, kind of address the overall attitude and expectations of the Chicago Cubs team that made so much noise in the offseason.
I guess the expectations depend on who you talk to. I mean, Cubs fans who've watched the movie Back to the Future are already predicting a World Series win in 2015. Anthony Rizzo predicted that they would win the division. I'd just like to see them get to be 500. That would be my goal.
Kerry, talk a little bit about Joe Maddon. I've been around him for a long time, and you've seen what he's done with the Rays organization. How excited are the Cubs and a Cubs fan about getting a manager like him, and what can he do for this team to possibly get him to the World Series?
Well, what's been interesting is just the noise level has changed at Cubs camp, and I know that sounds a little weird, but he likes music in the morning when they're doing their stretch just to kind of get the blood flowing. And if you start from there, it just sort of keeps building. He's very energetic. He's very honest, which I think is, I mean, a lot of people say they are, but it's really genuine and sincere with Joe. He leaves a lot to the coaches, delegates a lot to the coaches. So they're running things. And right now he's just kind of in the observation phase of camp, because he's still trying to get to know who all the guys are and what they can do. But he just seems to have invigorated a lot of the players here in camp from a year ago. It's just it's a totally different tone. It's a really good positive vibe that's going on right now, and it's been a lot of fun.
Kerry, of course, the Cubs winning the John Lester sweepstakes, signing him to that very lucrative free agent deal. Of course, he walks in with instant credibility with the two World Series rings. What kind of a presence has he been in that clubhouse with so many young guys?
Well, Lester is the anchor for the rotation, and it all starts from there. And it's been interesting to watch the other pitchers sort of keep an eye on him and follow what he does and just sort of watch, you know, what's John Lester doing, that type of thing. He just adds just a ton of credibility, if that's the right word, and also confidence to the rotation. Not to knock Jeff Samardzija, who was the opening day starter last year, but you take someone with Lester's credentials and put him at the top of the rotation, and suddenly things change quite a bit. With Lester, there's a huge battle right after him for the number five spot with a lot of pitchers, and that's something the Cubs haven't had for a long time.
Well, tell us a little bit about that rotation, how it rounds out, and how that will help Arrieta, who had a great year. And having a guy like John Lester, you just mentioned, learning from, and then you bring Hamill back, you have Wood in that rotation. Edwin Jackson, how's he doing? Talk a little bit about him.
Well, actually, I think Maddon's sort of leaning more towards the rotation with Lester, Arrieta, Hamill, and Kyle Hendricks, who was a real star last year in his rookie season. And after that, in the number five spot, it's wide open. That's where you've got Travis Wood and Edwin Jackson and Felix DuBrant and maybe even like a Jacob Turner, Tsuyoshi Wada battling for that number five spot. But Hendricks really shined last year and has done nothing in practices to make anybody think that he's not going to just pick up where he left off. So that changes, you know, when the games get started here in spring training, it's going to be really interesting to watch Wood and Jackson and see how they do. Wood in 2013 was an all-star. He didn't look like an all-star at all last year. Jackson has just not done well since he's joined the Cubs, and they have to figure out some way to get him back on track.
And, Kerry, obviously, as you alluded to, there's a lot of potential in that starting rotation behind John Lester. But talk about the bullpen. Is there still some concern there?
I like this bullpen. I think because a lot of the kids that were used last year now have that seasoning, and they know what to expect a lot more. You start with the closer with Hector Rondon, although they did add Jason Mott, who led the world, I think, in saves in, was it 2012, 2011. And, you know, you've got a guy like Mott who can help the kids. Mott could also step in if Rondon needs a breather. And then after, you know, working your way kind of backwards, Justin Grimm, Neil Ramirez, Pedro Strop really did well last year. They're still sort of sorting out who's going to be the lefty. They've got a young guy like a Zach Roscup who's done well, or they might be able, they might slip Wada, who isn't a candidate for the rotation. They could slide him into there if they need a lefty, or they've got Drake Britton, who they picked up from the Red Sox. So it's kind of an interesting mix. It's a lot of youth, a lot of power arms, and Mott, I think, is going to be really key. He's sort of, to me, he's sort of the secret weapon, because he's going to be the guy down there in the bullpen kind of helping the kids in the who are still getting to know what it takes to be a successful big league reliever.
Well, and then you look behind the plate, the ones catching these pitchers in the rotation. You have Castillo, who caught 110 games last year, but you brought in Montero, right, who's probably going to be the everyday guy. Tell me a little bit about what he's done to get used to this starting staff, get used to the pitching staff. And then you have David Ross, who has caught nothing but John Lester. Is Madden, you know, is he accepting, okay, this is going to be Lester's personal catcher? And are the Cubs going to carry three catchers?
Well, early in spring, both Madden and Theo Epstein, the Cubs president of baseball operations, have said that they will carry, there is a scenario where they could carry three catchers. Just on a side note from that, one way they could do it is because they've got a guy like Arizmendi Alcantara, who's very versatile, who's sort of like two players in one. So that would help the bench. But anyway, to go back to the catchers, Montero's really taken charge, and I think he's going to help Castillo in terms of developing his defensive skills. And then you've got a guy like Ross who I really think that Theo wanted in the clubhouse because of his leadership abilities. Ross, it's just amazing. The first time that Lester threw his live BP session with Ross behind the plate, it was just, you could just tell why the Cubs signed Ross. I mean, it was Lester and Ross, just the connection that was there and the trust that was there. It was, and I know it's practice and everything, but it was just really neat to watch. Ross kept, you know, shouting out encouragement, that's it, Johnny, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm sure Jeff can understand, you know, if you have that guy behind the plate that you trust, that's just huge in terms of your confidence and your performance. So that's going to be big. Castillo isn't a bad catcher. He just needs some grooming, and maybe having Montero there will really help him.
Kerry, of course, a lot of people are very excited to see full seasons from both Jorge Soler and Javier Baez. Do you still anticipate some growing pains from each of those two? And in the case of Baez, how much of a concern are the strikeouts?
Well, there will be big-time growing pains with the two of them. But I think one of the nice things in camp has been watching Baez and Soler. You can tell they're just much more comfortable now that they're in the big league camp. They know what to expect a little bit more. They're not kind of like the deer in the headlights look. And one of the key things the Cubs did this spring is bring in Manny Ramirez. Manny had worked with both of them at AAA Iowa last year when he was a player coach. Now he's just a coach, and he's working, you know, Javi made a point after Manny got here of taking all of Manny's gear and putting it in his locker, saying, I want you next to me. You know, Javi really wants to make sure that he keeps Manny close, and you see them on the field quite a bit talking. I think Manny will help them both. Soler gained 25 pounds of muscle. The man is huge. He could play linebacker in the NFL. The Cubs just want him, of course, obviously, to play right field. But he showed a lot more plate discipline than Javi, and I think he learned a lot in terms of what big league pitchers are going to do to him. And I think both these kids come in here, they're still kids, there will still be a lot of strikeouts. I know fans are going to hate that, but I also think that there's going to be a lot of excitement generated by the two of them.
Well, Kerry, I don't think you can get away without talking about Chris Bryant. There's all kinds of scenarios. Kinds of scenarios with him about should the Cubs, you know, limit his time as far as being a Super 2, send him down for the first month or couple weeks, have him start the big league, you know, make the big league roster. 43 home runs and 110 RBIs last year between two, you know, different places in the minor leagues. How do you keep this guy? If you plan on contending, how do you keep this guy out of the starting lineup?
I don't know. I just don't know. The only way I can see them keeping him out of the starting lineup is if he goes 0 for spring training, maybe, and they just want him to go to Iowa just to get a hit before he gets there. The Cubs do have a tendency to have their star prospects open on the road. They did that with Baez. They did that with Soler. And they also did that with Starling Castro a long time ago. So maybe they wait till one of their road trips to bring up Grant. They do have Mike Olt, who can play third. Olt looked a lot better. I'm just, as far as whether or not Bryant's going to be in the lineup on April 5th, I'm just going to say, take a line from Joe Madden, who said that Bryant will be in an opening day lineup somewhere, and then we'll just have to see where he is.
Kerry, as for guys that are on the major league roster right now, do you see Anthony Rizzo kind of taking a leap to becoming a legit MVP candidate for the 2015 season?
You could almost say that Rizzo was a legit. He was a contender last year. He did well in terms, considering where the team finished. He put up some pretty impressive numbers. I don't think anybody is happier in camp right now than Rizzo, just seeing how the rest of the lineup has improved. You know, you've got a guy like a Dexter Fowler who can get on base ahead of him. Starlin Castro is just much more comfortable, much more confident. It's just Rizzo has a lot of potential. Rizzo is a really special player, and I think the Cub fans will really see him develop and grow. I'd put him in the MVP listing right away.
All right, thanks to Kerry Muscat, MLB.com Cubs reporter. For Jeff Nelson, I'm Matt Wehmeyer, thanking you for joining us for MLB.com Extras National League Central.